causes carnage as the Championship League changes. This is the Croft Review.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. Yes, Croft has been and gone. We have had the sort of, we're now over the midpoint of the season. It has certainly changed things up in the Championship. As we said in the preview, no one motorsport this weekend. And it would then transpire, we wouldn't have a Jake Hill this weekend. He was unfortunately declared unfit by the Toker doctors for a viral ear infection that's been plaguing him over the summer. Colin Turkington was given the chance to jump in the car and did so in FP2, and then opted to not get involved, which was quite a strange one for me.
How much do you want to say on this?
I think... Harvey gave the excuse that he likes to repair and he hadn't had the chance to repair. I would give the excuse that you've got a chance to race at your favourite circuit in your favourite team in your favourite car where there's going to be absolutely no expectation on you whatsoever.
Yep.
And if you've scored points, which, let's be fair, it was a good day for BMW, yes, as we'll get to. And also, let's be fair, could he have potentially taken a win? I mean, if you look at where the BMW's finished and maybe he got reverse grid for race three. Who knows?
Yeah, it's possible. Possible.
Depending on what mood Proctor was in for the rest of the... or any BMW, to be fair. But yeah, I mean, certainly in my view, this was an opportunity missed by both Colin and WSR. Although, obviously, I'm not Colin Turkington, surprisingly enough.
I am not Colin Turkington.
No. So, I obviously, it is his decision. I just found it quite a strange one.
Yeah. The bit that I also found very strange was the fact that Jake had a go in FP1. Didn't do many laps from what I've seen. Then Colin jumped in FP2, and then apparently Jake jumped in for a few laps at the end of FP2.
Yeah, so there's a weird rule that I've seen bandied about that you have to run some time in FP2 to
then compete in qualifying.
Yeah.
But then they chose to withdraw the car, which I don't know whether it's a case of Turkington going, I'm all right, boys. Whether he's driven the car and going, it's not to my feeling, not to my liking.
No, but again, what I mean, all due respect, you're not going to finish last when there's certain other drivers on the grid. I won't name them, but you're not going to finish last. They're in a manufacturer's race as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm very disappointed in the decision, actually. Like, not from Jake Hill's point of view, if the medic has said you're not fit to race, then that's irrefutable. Yeah. You can't argue that. You can't have race drivers on the grid that aren't safe to race. And obviously with the balance affecting his ears and stuff and some of the high speed nature of Croft in particular, you can't run that risk. That's fair enough. But then the whole point of being able to run a substitute or revert, we don't have reserve drivers in the touring cars per se, but unofficially everything does have one.
Having a driver like that who can step in at any moment, having Dick Bennett, I think, said he was driving in the car back in April.
Yeah.
He still knows that car. It's a strange one.
And he's a four-time champion. You tell me he can't get in a car and drive it in a round the circuit and do something with it. I mean,
I would have been more understanding if they'd have come out and said, due to sponsor obligations, Turkington's not able to race for the weekend.
Yeah, then that would make sense. But
which kind of wouldn't...
I wouldn't be having this debate.
Wouldn't demand any of the questions.
No.
It feels like a strange one.
Very strange. If we actually get into the weekend's action then, because there's... It's a weird weekend to discuss because nothing happened for a long period. And then
everything happened all at once.
Yeah, exactly that. So we'll start on Saturday with the qualifying. It was dry conditions, despite our... to be fair, it rained on Sunday for a little bit, but for none of the races. So
no, unfortunately
we'll start with Saturday. And how did qualifying go down?
So in qualifying, obviously we had a couple of... one new driver in Max Buxton, and he didn't finish last, crucially. He was last in his session. His time was well off, but because of how the sessions are now set out, he didn't actually start last on the grid. That would be down to Nick Halstead. We had Shedden fairly low down in 17th, obviously following on from his win at Alton Park.
Did he start 17th?
Started 17th.
What a weekend he had in the end then.
I know.
Blimey, yeah, okay.
We had Dexter Patterson all the way up in 13th, so did well, unlucky not to get through into that second session. And then probably the main casualty of the second session was Ashley Sutton all the way down in 11th. Track limits were quite a popular
popular
reason for people losing their track times this weekend. And there's a lot of discussion on social media that have gone on as a result of it. And I think Tim Harvey, and we both actually agree with him on this, Tim Harvey spoke about it really, really well.
You will hear a massive scrape later as I get the soapbox out. But I'll be saving that towards the end because there's lots I want to rant about at the end of the show. Yeah. So Yeah, that will feature as part of it. So I won't say anything about it here because I want people to stay. People like the soapbox.
Yes,
and
yes,
I want people do. To stay listening. So that will come at the end.
So then making it through into the top six shootout were Lloyd, Robottom, Chilton, Doble, Camish, and Ingram. Unfortunately, Lloyd had an engine problem right towards the end of the session, which means that he couldn't set his possible fastest time. So he'd end up starting sixth. Mikey Doble, brilliant performance once again, up in third. But Ingram took pole position with quite a decent time. He was about 2.5 tenths ahead of anyone else, and he looked so quick this weekend.
Of course, Hyundai having had to change the floor coming into this weekend, Ingram having minimal boosts because of where he was in the championship, and none of it making
I was going to say, you sent me a meme, didn't you, going, oh, they've changed the rules for Croft and everything's going to be different anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, the car's very good. Ingram's very quick. And I think I had a little bit of an argument in the summer break to what car is best. I still maintain that car is best. And I'm sure you would probably agree that over one lap it's best, even if you don't quite agree.
I think that's what we said in the off-season break, is that over one lap, that's a car I'd choose. But possibly for a championship tilt, it might well be the Napa.
We'll get into the race action now, starting with race one. Rain earlier in the day, we had a greasy track, but it was one of those that drivers absolutely hate because whilst they were on the pit, on the pit straight with all this, you know, the VIPs mingling 10, about.
15-minute setup, getting cars around from there.
It dried significantly that you could see on the screen there. So, yeah, one of those where you had to start on slicks. It was just a case of which one did you choose. It certainly wasn't a wet weather track, and if anyone had started on wets, they'd be in the pit after probably at the end formation of the formation lap. Yeah. Because it just, there was a few hairy parts on the circuit, but nothing that, you know, the slick tire couldn't handle.
Pretty sure they spoke to one of the drivers on the formation lap going, this is massively dried in the time that we've just been sitting here and the sun was out and there was no more rain on the horizon.
In terms of the tires, Sutton was the highest to go on the hards.
Sounds familiar.
Well, to be fair, when you qualifying 11th, might as well get out the way in race one and then rebuild for the second and third race. Morgan, Smiley, Dorlin, Moffat, Shedden, Osborne, Jelly, and Buxton all.
Can't read your own writing.
No. Also, all started on the hard tyre. And again, the further you are back on the grid, it makes sense. Just get that out the window, and I'll come to tyres later on and my thoughts on that. In the actual race itself, this was probably the dullest of the day, I would suggest. Ingram got off well, and that was basically that. He won the race.
It was quite processional, wasn't it? And the gap that him and Camish pulled out in the early laps was really quite extensive. I think they had like a couple of second gap over third place and back.
Yep, in terms of early moves and shakers, Proctor was certainly on the move off straight from the back where go, basically. Past Robottom with a good late move down at Tower, and then he get up past Doble as well. Doble would then drop it himself at the chicane. Bit amateur hour, dare we say.
Yeah. I think he'll be kicking himself. But what I was quite surprised that he didn't really fight his way back through once he dropped back.
I know as well.
It didn't seem to be too much damage either.
No, and on the commentary, you were like, was it Robottom that's behind him? I can't remember. There's certainly a car behind him. Or has he been tagged and then switched to that? Like, no, that car is a mile behind him.
It was Sutton, wasn't it?
It was Sutton behind him. It's like, yeah, did Sutton tag him? No.
Just dropped a wheel on the dirt and found the barrier on the left-hand side.
Nick Hamilton got the famous meatball flag with a bit of body work flapping and had to come into the pit. Shame, because at points this weekend he was running not just in the points, I'd say well into the points, but car issues conspired to prevent him from maximising that, unfortunately. Rainford would then go through at Barcroft with Aaron Taylor Smith with a fantastic move, a very, very good jink, and sort of caught Aaron Taylor Smith.
Cold.
And Sutton was up into sixth with a good move at the hairpin on De Leon. He was making real good moves on that hard tyre, to be fair to him. You know, you think to yourself, is it going to be another one of those days where the hard tyre just doesn't have the fall off you thought it was going to? That was not the case. It was a false dawn. But
he had a little bit of fortune, obviously, with Doble falling back. But the rest of the places he actually gained on merit and on raw pace and seemed to hold his own really well. Something that we saw Ingram do at Alton Park on the hard tyre.
We then had our first real row of the year, which was quite an aggressive is strong, but we were certainly shouting at each other.
Smiley happened.
Yeah, well, Chris Smiley and Gorn Chevron were racing well together. Both, of course, would have had difficult qualifying sessions. Smiley lost his fastest time to track limits, which he refused to admit existed until he saw the footage. Like,
yes.
Yep. Okay. Gotcha. Fair enough.
Both on the hard tyre as well. So equal ground and equal footing.
Shevlin sort of goes around the outside at turn one, not to make a move, but because he's got nowhere else to go. He's tried to out drag on the straight.
Yeah, side
by side. Possibly a boost pass on the straight. Hasn't got it. You can't then brake and go back to the inside. So he's stuck himself on the outside. Smiley's then clipped the curb going into the complex.
Taking the inside line. Yep.
And as in doing that, he's moved the curb. Bounces him slightly across Shedden's...
Kicks the back of the car out.
Yeah, and it comes across Shedden's front end. You blamed Shedden. I blamed Smiley. And the answer's probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, on first instant and first viewing, I was very much on Shedden's, because Smiley's car has ended up turning across the front of Shedden and then off into the gravel, and Shedden's carried on.
You think he's punted... At first viewing, you thought he'd punted him.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then on second viewing, once we saw from almost a reverse angle, you could see Smiley's car kick out. But I do sort of feel like Shedden could have possibly got out of it a little bit more and just kept on going a little bit. I'm very much 80% it's a racing incident.
I couldn't disagree with you more. Shedden cannot make the car invisible, and he cannot...
I'm not asking him to make the car invisible, but there weren't any brake lights on.
No, but you wouldn't brake at that part of the corner. And
if you've got a car coming across the front of you, you would.
But it happens so quickly. And even if he slammed on the anchors, I don't think Smiley misses him anyway.
Possibly not.
Also, if I may be so bold, don't clip the curb so hard that you unsettle the car. I mean, that's also... I mean, you know, lots of people go through their side-by-side or race through there and don't clip the curb so hard that they fly off at a funny angle.
The two of them were absolutely last of the late breakers to get into there, weren't
they? Yeah,
They were probably running a little bit more speed than they might expect on a normal lap.
Yeah, that's fair comment. And I say, in fairness to Shedden, I don't know where else he can go. He's not trying a move as such. They weren't side-by-side in the corner. Shedden has backed out into the corner somewhat, pencil not going side by side, and then the way that Smiley hits the curb and unsettles the car, it goes across Shedden's front end. Shedden's got to turn to make the corner, otherwise he'll end up sort of in the barrier in a straight line. You have to turn. Even if he slams the anchors on, Smiley hits him, could hit him in a worse way.
Let us know your thoughts, though.
Well, the stewards agreed with somewhere in the middle that it was nobody's fault in particular, and it was put down to a racing incident.
I think having seen the replays, we were very much of the agreement afterwards that it was much more of a racing incident than anyone's fault.
Although if I was to blame anybody, I blame Smiley and you blame Shedden. So,
yeah. Not quite sure how you can blame Smiley for it, but
I'm not sure how you can blame Shedden for it. So there we go. There we go.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts. Put it down in the comments where you think it was either driver's fault or whether you do think it was just a racing incident as the steward's fault, with no penalties handed out for that one.
Yep, in any event, it would call a safety car.
It was about the most entertaining part of the race.
Well, yes and no, because I'm going to come to another fairly entertaining part in terms of the grand picture.
That had Shedden involved as well.
A safe, did it? Was it him who took out the marker?
He was on the inside. We'll get to it.
Okay, so the safety car was called to rid Smiley's stricken Hyundai from the circuit. And then we saw Ash Sutton in strife under the safety car. And we thought, what on earth is happening here? It was on the safety car restart.
It was bizarre.
Yeah, it was coming out of the final hairpin. Safety car come in, and we're thinking, okay, Sutton's up to, I think, about fourth at this point.
Sixth,
presumably, okay.
Yep.
And you thought, okay, this is pretty good for him. There's up top, you thought Camish might get after Ingram. We might have a bit of a race on our hands here. And then Sutton's coming into the pits with a very deflated tyre.
Yeah, he'd almost cut across the curb at the final hairpin, knowing that he already had a problem coming into the pits. And I think Shedden got slightly held up behind him. But yeah, pop tyre, and it goes on to be found that it was from sort of like a screw or a nail or something like that, rather than anything sinister like tire wear or anything like that.
Yes, which is even worse the way for him, because it's sheer dumb luck, unfortunately.
Yes, it is.
That was pretty much the end of the race, to be honest with you. Sutton was in the pit lane, and then Ingram wasn't caught by Camish,
he made a really, really good restart and was able to take another couple of seconds up the road and scamper off into the distance with quite comfortable ease.
Which pretty much sums up the rest of race one, really. So that finished with Tom Ingram across the line in first, Dan Camish and Senna Proctor on the podium. Great charge from Senna, who looked quick all weekend, as we said. Daniel Rowbottom continuing to solidify a really good season from him in fourth. Chilton in fifth, DeLeon sixth, Aaron Taylor-Smith seventh, Rainford eighth, Lloyd ninth, Morgan 10th, Shedden 11th, Patterson 12th, Moffat 13th, Osborne 14th, and Mikey Doble recovering to 15th. A couple of things I just want to pick out on there if I can. First of all, that again, we'll come back to this at the end of the show a little bit, but Camus said in his interview afterwards he considered dropping out of the top three under the safety car to make sure he didn't have to go into the hard tyre.
As did Proctor.
Which, I mean, you must listen to this if you're in charge of the series. You can't have leading drivers, so, but I shall come back to that later on. And obviously, the other thing I was going to mention is Daniel Lloyd down in ninth. Disappointing given that he was in the top six at the start of the race and the engine maybe still feeling some of the effects of the day before. It never really got up to racing speed across the Sunday, really.
From what it sounds like and the reports that I've seen on social media, it sounds like the car was very close to overheating and boiling everything by the sounds of it, which is why he had to slam the brakes and come in at the end or before his final qualifying run. So I do wonder what damage there might have been because of that, and they were running a very almost cautious engine mode, as it were, for the rest of the weekend, which consequently meant that we didn't actually see him in race three, which we'll get to eventually.
Yeah, the final thing I just want to mention there as well is Darrell DeLeon in sixth. It's been a difficult year for BMW, and I thought DeLeon drove a really good race, came through the field expertly, kept his nose clean, and BMW had good pace this weekend. And it makes you wonder if you're a man called Colin that you might have just done something a little bit in that car. But there we go.
Yes, we'll see. Getting on to race two then. Obviously, the top three would be starting on hard tyres. Just pipe down.
I'm saving it.
And one other driver in Nick Hamilton would also be starting on them. So the rest of the grid on the softs, and Robotton was in the prime position to take advantage. Sutton, coming from P20, would also be on the soft tyre, and it was going to be impressive to see how he moved through the field with ease, really.
One thing I will just say, before, again, I'm trying to keep most of this till the end, but it's so pointless that everybody knew who the winner of this race was before we had even turned. Everybody knew it was going to be Robotton. And okay, you said it might be Robotton or it might be Chilton. It was one of two. It was, you know, and realistically, the fourth, fifth, and sixth were guaranteed to be first, second, and third, more or less.
Yeah, and unless they were in.
Yeah. Which is.
Yeah.
But hey, we want to shake at the championship and make it more unpredictable, guys.
I'll get onto the action now.
Yeah, sorry.
So there was a fairly equal start at the front of the grid in race two. Robotton managed to get past Proctor early on, and Chilton followed him through with quite consummate ease. It signified Proctor gradually shuffling his way through the field, and being in third position, he was the driver that got attacked the most and also got shuffled back the most. And that's what we've seen with this tyre rule throughout the rest of the season as well.
I think it's fair to say as well that neither Proctor, Camish or Ingram made life particularly hard for anybody because they just knew they didn't have the ability to fight the cars behind them, which again is another problem which I'll get to later.
Sutton just gained the six positions on the opening lap.
He just picks his way through. It's a PlayStation game to him, isn't it? It's unbelievable. You watch the footage of him. He just at one point into the final hairpin. He's so far wide, but he just picks his way through and just drives around the whole lot of them. It's just insane.
One thing I must say is doing against the drivers that are down that bottom end of the grid, yes, will be slightly easier due to.
Okay, I'll let you finish your point first before I make.
Sutton's immense talent and being able to put the car exactly where he wants it, and the other drivers almost. They're good drivers, yes, but they're not his level.
No, but on the flip side, you then also don't quite know what they're going to do. They are more unpredictable. If you go racing alongside Tom Ingram, you know he's not going to stick you in a wall. You just know he's not going to. Whereas
he'll try to and give you the biggest nudge he can without doing it.
And a big smile afterwards going, there was no contact. It's touring car. No, but generally, you know that if you go side by side with him, Camish, those kind of drivers, you know you're not going to end up in a wall. You can race hard with them. Whereas if you're at the back of the grid with somebody who's new or somebody who's
less experienced
or just a bit more bolshy or doesn't quite have the same level of control as some of the other drivers.
Yeah.
You run that risk.
You do. Robotton and Chilton on lap two managed to make it through into first and second, into the into the complex and at the hairpin. And once those two got out front, they were fairly well off and down the road.
They were. One thing I found really interesting about that, though, is that Chilton really couldn't keep pace with Robottom, particularly. Robottom checked out. They both got through into the first, second in fairly, you know, similar times. It wasn't like Robottom got through and then Chilton got stuck.
Yep.
In fact, as soon as Robottom got through, Ingram waved Chilton through to say, you might as well, you know, we've got to go after them.
You've already noted it. Ingram and Camish didn't really fight it, especially with those top drivers, that they knew they were going to lose out to those anyway. It was about not fighting and getting pulled back into the pack even further.
Yep.
Proctor, as I said, was then shuffled out on lap two at Sunny Out and kind of dropped 3-4 positions, pushed wide onto the grass as well, which really didn't help his progress. And by lap four, Sutton was up to 10th at this point, slowing down the progress, but still chomping away at it. Proctor by lap four as well was all the way down to 11th already, and it's just a sign of the tyre difference.
Yeah.
And we've already discussed this. I personally think that if we're going to go for a two compound, it should be a soft and a medium.
Save it.
But because there will be less delta, yes, there will still be delta, but at least drivers are able to fight. And I personally want to see more fighting rather than sort of like preservation of position.
I've got another solution as well, but again, I will say it for the ending rants.
Moving on to lap seven then, and Sutton had made it up to seventh by this point, and he was sort of like, his progress slowed, but you kind of expect that the field lengthens out and the drivers that he's gradually getting up to. Ingram gave his best go, but didn't really fight too much to let Sutton by, did he?
There's no point. Again, you know he's got full boost capacity to your one lap. You know he's on the soft tyre compared to your hard. And you know it's Ash Sutton. And the harder you make it for you, I'm not saying he's going to put you in the wall, but why fight him and why make something of it? Just let him go through and then hope that he'll get into a tangle further up the road and he's trying to go further through the field. You know, you're not going to be the one that puts him off, but you know, the next driver up might be when they're fighting for position on the same tyre.
My predictions in race two came to tatters as Aaron Taylor-Smith just randomly dropped a load of positions down the timing tower. And then it was found that he would have a puncture, therefore dropping him pretty much out of the race and out of any point scoring. Smiley had contact with Osborne during an overtake at the hairpin, and it was quite a bulgy move, shall we say.
Yeah.
And we've seen a couple of those this weekend into the hairpin, I must say.
It's difficult because it is such a fast-ish, slow, almost dead-stop corner. It's a very tight, slow corner in comparison to
the slowest corner on the calendar.
There you go. And also, it's a real good opportunity for overtaking, particularly if you've had a good run through the complex. And that's the other thing as well. It's one of those corners that you can get a really good run in the corners preceding it, and then you've then got to make a decision. Either you stop early and don't go for the move, or you try and find a way to make the move.
Yeah. And then pretty much same as race one, it was fairly comfortable out front for Robottom. He was unchallenged and took home the win quite comfortably from Chilton and then De Leon, who got through on the other hard runners and was quite comfortably in third.
Yeah, I thought all three of the top podium position drivers did a really good race. They got through the hard tyre cars with minimal fuss, which is what they've got to do. Obviously, we saw at Alton Park, that wasn't necessarily the easiest thing to do on the hards compared to the softs. For some reason, this time at Croft, it was a lot easier. But they did what they needed to do with minimal fuss. And I say, in Robottom's case in particular, it's just another really good example of his driving this year, that he got through the field very cleanly. And once he got out front, he didn't make a single mistake, and he was there very comfortably in the end.
Didn't miss a gear this year.
No, not this year. Not this year.
One thing I must say is that considering how high and how well Sutton was running on the hard tyre, I did think that those that swapped to the hard tyre for race two, I didn't think they were going to fall as far as they eventually did.
No, I do wonder if the track helped in race one, that the softs couldn't get up to speed as quickly because of the cooler condition. I know the hards can't get up to their speed either, but because the softs just can't maximise their benefit in race one, certainly for the opening lap. So I think perhaps we saw in race one that once Sutton reached a certain point, he probably wasn't going any further anyway, until the puncture completely ruined that anyway. But yeah, I just think with the track the way it was, you couldn't quite get the softs into the window where they could hammer home that advantage on the hard.
The only other thing that I can think of is that there were so many people running the hard tyre in race one here, is that made his finishing position look better.
Yeah, that's true as well, potentially, yeah. Yeah.
So the top 15 for race two then, Dan Robotton wins from Tom Chilton and Darrell DeLeon. Adam Morgan up to fourth. Ash Sutton all the way from 20th to fifth eventually. Charles Rainford in sixth, from Sheddon in seventh. Ingram, the top running hard driver, in eighth. Aidan Moffat in ninth. Dan Hamish, the second running hard driver, in 10th. Dexter Patterson took home the Independence in 11th, from Sam Osborne 12th, Smiley 13th, Doble 14th, again not making much progress, and Dan Lloyd in 15th.
So we should move on to race number three, where all the action happened then. Number nine was pulled, which put Aidan Moffat on pole, who'd had, a semi-decent afternoon of picking up points.
Quiet.
But effective.
Yes.
Dan Lloyd missing from the grid, as we alluded to earlier. Yeah. Again, that's believed to be down to an engine problem. Mm. It's a real shame, because obviously coming into this weekend, he lost a major sponsor. He replaced those with five.
And he's done a lot of hard work over the off-season.
He has, but a circuit where you'd imagine in negotiations, he's saying sponsors are going really well at Croft. This is a great opportunity to hit the ground running, and they haven't done. And it's just a real shame, because he works so hard to get these to the grid.
His luck and his fortune this season certainly hasn't been that of Smiley's. And I don't think he's quite had the pace either of Smiley this season.
I would agree with both of those statements. Off the line, Moffat was straight into the lead. And then we had the first... incident of the race, straight into the first corner. Ingram got a much better second phase, which is a phrase I absolutely hate, but something that comes up particularly because of the F1 stuff.
It was quite evident, though.
It was, yeah.
It was almost like Moffat had missed his gear change.
Yes, basically, Ingram got a really good overrun on the outside, and similar to Sheddon in race one.
Much further alongside, though, there.
Yeah, he was more... But unlike Sheddon in race one, Ingram was trying to make a move, whereas Sheddon wasn't making a move in race one, he just put the car there, but... We've discussed that. Ingram did try and go around the outside of Moffat, and then Moffat tagged him. Ingram saved it in sixth gear.
He was most of the way past him as well. It was really a quarter panel of Ingram as he came back across.
Again, I don't blame Moffat for this, because he has to make the corner. He has to turn in for the corner. I don't think... It's not like Ingram's on the outside and you're turning to the inside. It's not like Moffat has turned outside to hit Ingram. No. Ingram's tried to cut back across to get in front. In my opinion, slightly mistimed it, or... Moffat has slightly mistimed it, but it's a first lap racing incident. If you're going to go around the outside, you run that risk of then you have to still make the corner. If you're Moffat, you can't just stop and not make the corner.
One thing I would say, and something we haven't mentioned as of yet, is that there were no tyre bundles on either of the chicanes this weekend, which is something that we much prefer to see. Otherwise, we could have had a much bigger incident, especially with this one.
Yes, agreed.
Ingram would have been sideways into that tyre barrier, and who knows what would have happened with the cars coming behind.
Yeah, completely agree. Ingram would save the slide, but did fall to third. The stewards took no action after the race. Yeah. I think that's the right decision for me. That's a first corner, first incident, first lap, first corner style incident, where you can probably sit down and point fingers at all parties involved, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say. Sutton was then by Ingram, who was then forced wide by Rainford, which...
He was getting roughed up, wasn't he, first couple of laps?
I was surprised by how bolshy Ingram was in these first laps. Bearing in mind that you've had a better weekend than Sutton by virtue of the fact you finished two races and Sutton only finished one of them. And certainly with Moffat, I kind of feel like he was forced into making the move because he got the better run. And once you start on the outside, you get the run, similar to what I was saying earlier about Sheffield, you can't just stop and come back to the inside. You've now got to do something. Yep. So I get why he did it. With Rainford, I was had my heart in my mouth as I was going through the chicane and out to sunny in, sunny out. Yep. He was out on the marbles on the really fast part of the circuit, the bumpy part of the circuit, where we were seeing hundreds of incidents throughout the years down there. I just think, so why is he racing it this hard? Yep. I was very surprised. And he got away with it, you have to say. Did get himself slightly shuffled down the order, but he did get away with it. But, I mean, let's be honest, a couple of centimetres either way, and he could have been off in the barriers at a big speed.
Yep, definitely.
I'm slightly surprised, particularly for Ingram, who is so clean and normally. And I wouldn't say we have the same criticism as we did of Colin with not getting his elbows out.
He didn't have his pointsy head on, did he?
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. And I was just a bit surprised by that. Of course, Rainford was also on the hard tyres because of where he had, still had to run those. So even if Ingram had let Rainford get past, he was guaranteed, you'd have said, to get him at some point anyway. So I'm just stunned by how aggressive Ingram was, but maybe he feels he has to. It's when he, I suppose on the flip side as well, it must be really disheartening when you have your title rival out in race one, recover to silly position in race two and get past you, but from the back of the grid, and then be in prime position for race three because you just know that on the front row or near the front, something was on the front row. It was near
Ingram on the front row, trying to make the most of it. I think that's what he was trying to do.
With Sutton a car or two behind him, thinking, why won't he just go away? Yeah. So I can understand that to a degree, but it just seemed a little bit unnecessary. And then talking of unnecessary, we got a really big accident, and one we're quite fortunate to have as more serious damage or injury to.
Decent amount of damage, to be fair.
Yeah, it was. So it's coming through the complex before the hairpin. Rainford, for me, sticks a very lazy move on Camish that is never on in a month of Sundays. The door, there's no gap.
There's also a tyre difference here, as we've already mentioned. Rainford's on the hard tyre. You're probably going to fall back through the field. It's not something that he needs to fight.
Yeah.
And Camish had enough grip to go around the outside. There's enough room and enough space for the two of them to go side by side through that complex. I don't know whether he's clipped the curb on the inside, but he sent Camish wide onto the grass.
So here's the crux of the problem, isn't it? You've created a tyre delta, which means that you're basically telling Rainford you're wrong for trying to race a car on a soft tyre.
Yeah.
And that is a ludicrous position to be in. And I think this accident is caused, it's caused by misjudgment from Rainford as well, but it's also caused by the fact that you've got these ridiculous deltas on the, between the cars, and they're racing two completely different races.
Another thing that I don't think has helped this incident is, I don't know how quickly it would have dried, but the grass may well still have been a little bit damp.
Yeah.
And the fact that there isn't some sort of possible gravel there.
Yeah, and Camish has also said on social media words to the effect of, in hindsight, you perhaps shouldn't have steered back onto the circuit, but you make a decision in that moment. Yep. And unfortunately, as he comes back across the circuit,
he causes carnage.
Well, yeah, but it's then pure luck to his. He hits De Leon really, really hard.
Yep.
And it's a test of how well these touring cars are built that De Leon gets out the car fairly unscathed. Somebody just pointed out to me on social media today that he was injured, but I'm not trying to do down his injury, but he got out of the car and is basically okay.
All drivers were able to walk away from it.
And are basically okay. Whereas Dillon got effectively T-boned by Camish, albeit not on the driver's side, thankfully.
I think it was slightly more towards the front axle, which helped as well.
Yes.
As was pretty much identical damage on Smiley as the ricochet came across. And then Camish's car was pretty much
front end
totaled.
Destroyed. Yeah, front end destroyed.
And to be fair to him, he then pulled off of the circuit himself afterwards once all the other drivers had got through.
Yeah, I mean, without going on and on and on about it, we've got a series which is really expensive. We're seeing drivers drop out left, right and centre. We're seeing a merry-go-round. We're seeing sponsors problems. Yep. And now we've got three cars. Okay, with Camish and Napa, it's probably going to be a fine because they have got that...
And WSR.
Well, you say that, but there's not a lot on that car. So, I mean...
No, but I think WSR are putting all their money behind the Leon.
Yeah.
Hence the lack of sponsors.
Okay. But even so, it's a massive hit for them to absorb. But I think Napa can absorb it better than anybody else because of the massive backing they've got. And then you've got effectively an independent team it wasn't as badly damaged for Smiley, but
they've got a lot of work to do in 2 weeks considering the engine damage on Lloyd's as well.
And they could just do about this kind of thing. That look, crashes and incidents are always a good part of touring car or any motorsport racing. Yeah. That's the nature of the beast, but certainly I think you can avoid these situations by having rules that don't lend to these ridiculous situations occurring. I'll get on more into that in the end.
There are a couple of drivers that won out majorly.
Well, also, just people also lost on this. Doble and Robottom both had to enter the pits with damage they picked up through avoiding action as well. You'd be right, there are a couple of drivers that did luck out on this, which is always the way in these kind of incidents. And we had a long safety car period that followed, as you'd expect, a lot of recovery and tidy up to do based on that. Just a real shame, particularly for De Leon, who had finished every race this year. Yes.
Did you happen to mention that?
Obviously, I backed him on for Jack Sears this weekend. He won race one and two in the Jack Sears, and I was quite smug that I thought basically you only had to finish to win the Jack Sears in race three. As I pointed out to you at the start of said race, he's finished every race this season, and then he gets wiped out by something that's not anything to do with him. Well, I've made it even worse by Rainford, who was your Jack Sears pick, who by finishing this race would also win the Jack Sears if De Leon didn't score. So a really peevish moment for me, which I'm really angry about. And do you know what? I never want to see Rainford in a touring car again. After all, we backed him coming into the series. No, I've had enough. No. Obviously, that is a joke.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Proctor was probably the biggest beneficiary from this.
Yes,
he managed to choose that inside line where everyone else was scattering out wide and gained a load of positions and was in prime position once the restart came.
Absolutely. Once the restart did come, Ingram was again in his bolshy mood, door banging with Sutton quite aggressively, and did get through on Ash Sutton as well. And I do wonder if that is part in his mind that he knows he's got to finish front of Sutton more often than not. Towards this end part of the season, otherwise he won't be champion. And also, again, as I said before, knowing that Sutton just is inevitable and doesn't go away. So he did force himself back into the lead. And then we saw one of the moves of the season, and I've watched it back today on my lunch break about 17 times, and I still don't know how it really happened. So going into the complex, there were four cars, Ingram in the lead. You then had Sutton, you had Sheddon, and you had, who was the other car?
Moffat.
Moffat. Yeah, you're right, Moffat.
Yeah.
Moffat. Moffat was still second at this. Was he still leading this
Moffat
point?
Was in the lead.
He was leading at this point.
And almost like became a rolling roadblock coming into the final hairpin.
That's right. Ingram was about to try and make a move on the outside.
Yep.
Which then Sutton decided, oh, there's a gap opening up on the inside.
Well, Sutton started on the outside.
And then when Ingram went to the outside, Sutton went, no, I'll go to the inside then.
Yep.
Shedding out of the way. I don't care that you're here. You can yeet yourself off into the wall.
He did completely forget there was another car there, didn't he?
Well, I think Shedding was also trying to do the same with Sutton. I think they both had to notice that and had the same idea at the same time. Unfortunately, Shedding, he did get clipped and got semi-spun. He did well to save it, actually, and get himself facing forward and still, you know.
Didn't lose too much.
Either. No, I was going to say, didn't lose too much out of it. But Sutton, because of that, whilst Moffat was fighting on the Ingram front, Sutton nipped through on the inside and took the lead. In a ridiculous fashion.
It is bizarre. You do get some weird and wonderful moves, shall we say, down at the hairpin complex, which I think is part of the reason that you love Croft so much, isn't it?
Yeah, because it just brings that unpredictable racing. Yeah. And there are so many, I look behind me at the little outline of Croft I have, there's not a single corner on that circuit you can't overtake at. There's some that are a lot harder than others, as we found out, turn one. But generally, there's not a single corner you cannot overtake at, which is not true of some of the other circuits we're going to. Silverstone, we're looking at you.
I knew you were going to say that.
it is very true, though. Then Rainford had a nice little spin at the hairpin, courtesy of your favourite driver, Stephen Jelly, which is an incident I believe has been looked at Knock Hill, because I think the stewards had enough by the time.
To go home by
well, then. It's not. Well, to be fair, the touring cars wasn't too bad. The legends have about 90,000 online notice boards that they had to look at. So, yeah, but Jelly did apparently spin Rainford round at the hairpin.
It's fairly obvious.
Yeah, you're very, very happy of that. And if it's any consolation, Jenny would then go into the gravel with a puncture.
What a shame.
Yeah, that sort of made you feel a little better. And then Proctor decided that he didn't like team orders. He was quite happy to run his own race, and he was in his own championship, and he barraged his way past
Ingram.
Talking
of bullshit.
Yes.
Yeah, we all thought, okay, Proctor's in the prime position here, can sit behind him.
No. He always have a trophy.
Decided against
He is from Yorkshire, and this race was in Yorkshire. I don't know if it was mentioned at all at any point throughout the day.
It was a hell of a move down the inside.
Fantastic move.
But yeah, I was quite taken aback by it.
It was certainly one of those that Zac Brown would go, yee-haw, that's what Papaya Race is all about, man, if he was watching Oscar and Lando do it. I was sitting there thinking, but Ingram's in the championship battle and Proctor's only doing half a season. What is he doing?
Yep.
But it was a very good move. Some conspiracy theorists out there suggested that it was all planned because Proctor would then go on to take out Moffat a bit later on, and then Ingram would get back through magically into second. So it was all part of the plan, which seems a little bit grandiose, I have to say.
Yes, it does.
I will say that the Proctor incident on Moffat is very naughty, and I think it's a real... I know you're not Moffat's leading fan club member. That comes down to me. But my heart broke for Moffat on this because he'd driven a really good race. He was almost guaranteed a podium, I'd say, at this point. So, if not, he'd have got fourth.
Yeah,
he was certainly in around...
A good finishing position.
Yeah, he was certainly in around the podium, that's for sure. And to be fair, in losing the race lead, he didn't do a lot wrong. He just got caught out by Sutton doing a madness, which, okay, that can happen. And then... Proctor, it was similar to the Rainford mood on Camish in many ways. It was never on, and it was basically a case of, I'm coming through, get out of the way. And my heart broke for Moffat in that instance because he's done absolutely nothing wrong at all.
Yeah, I'm amazed more hasn't been done about the incident, and we'll get on to it in penalty corner.
Yeah,
what penalties have been given.
I'll explain why I don't think anything could be done when we get there as well. towards the end of the race, we'd see both Dorlan and Hamilton have to pit with issues with their cars. Again, real shame for Hamilton, because with the reduced grid this weekend, it was a real chance for him to score points. Halstead would benefit from this by making a points finishing position in race three. Ingram would then nip back by Proctor at the hairpin. It did very much look a little bit like, oh, have me fun.
I'll let you through now.
I do wonder if part of the thinking was, okay, look.
Can he catch Sutton?
Yeah, he's quick. Can he catch Sutton? Can he, you know, potentially be a bit rough with Sutton in a way that Ingram can't? Because if Ingram puts Sutton off, then you're going to get all the Barrys in the world coming out.
Just chuck a grenade in there, but kind of thing.
Yeah, but say if Ingram clashes with Sutton or vice versa, all the Barrys will come out onto social media and start saying, he's won the championship by cheating. This is Schumacher.
Although I think that would probably happen if the same happened with any of the virtue drivers against Sutton.
But it might be slightly less with its property. He's got a little bit of a reputation for being bolshy, shall we say. And then Rainford had a cone in his bumper, which was quite an interesting end to the day.
It was quite entertaining, because you were willing that to be back an orange flag, weren't you?
What I will say is that I cannot believe it wasn't, in the sense that... Okay, then let me just give my case first, and you can then give me the adenoidy answer to why it doesn't breach motorsport regulations after all. Last year we saw... Okay, I know the rules can change from year to year before you give me that as an out... Last year, they were super strict on anything that flapped. Yes. Anything that flapped, you know, to the point where you're thinking, oh, crikey, if they're folding their wing mirror, they're going to get called in here. You know. This year, a literal cone, which could, let's be honest, it could have flown out at any point. Now, if you're now going to be really, really boring about it, and it was very funny. Look, don't get me wrong, a car with a cone stuck in it is very funny. Like, it is very funny. We both went to uni. A cone is the perfect accompaniment to a night out. We know this. It's fine. But... real talk, they don't know how well it's lodged in there. It could come out at any point. It could fly out and go into the crowd.
It was a fairly sizable cone.
Yes, but my point is it could fly out at any point, which could hit another car. It could hit another car's windscreen. It probably won't go through the windscreen. It could fly into the crowd. It's unlikely to.
Do you know what I was more amazed by?
The chance is there. Well, it didn't do any damage.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
That it didn't put a radiator in or something like that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Or go all the way through and hit the wheel and start to rub or something like that, but...
Yeah, well, the position that it had gone in on the front of the car, and I know you're not going to like this argument, but I'm giving it, it wasn't flapping around.
No,
it was fully wedged in the front.
I agree.
Almost like another air intake.
I agree it wasn't flapping around.
So that is the main reason why I don't think it was actually called in, because it was well lodged and wedged in there that it wasn't then going to cause a danger to anyone else.
On the flip side, it wouldn't flap around because of the nature of a traffic cone, it's not going to flap around in that sense, but... Obviously, I'm slightly bitter because it meant the Rainford was able to finish the race and win your point. But I do, this is where I think that some fans rightly get a bit annoyed about how consistency is applied in any sport. And it's the same across any sport. You can watch F1, you can watch football, you can watch any sport you like. Apart from anything where there's a degree of fact, i.e. tennis, the ball is either in or it is out. There is no debate about that when Hawkeye works. but in motorsport, there is some grey, and I accept that. But I look at it and think to myself, is that rear wheel arch from last year that was never going to fly off because it's bolted in place and a little bit is just flipped up enough to black flag, you know, that car.
Black and orange flag that car,
but a cone that is in the front of a car that could come out at any point is fine. And that's my point.
I also think that we only had two laps left at this point.
Yeah, but that's in material. It still can come out at any point.
The size of the cone and how far it was wedged into the car.
Have you seen the movie Speed?
Yes.
It's like saying, oh, well, there's a bomb on board the thing, but it's all right, it's only a lap to go. So when it goes off, it'll go off in a controlled environment. Rubbish. Nonsense.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into that one. I don't think it was deemed as a danger, one, because of how long was left in the race, and the fact that it was well wedged in there. That's all I'm going to say.
The latter part I accept more from the argument than the former.
Let us know your thoughts on what you think should have happened, whether the stewards or race officials were correct in leaving the car as it was. It was quite funny when it came back into Park Firm. Still there.
Yeah, they can take it out. It's under Park Firm.
I know.
It's now part of the car. I'm also stunned it didn't feel like a ride height check or anything. Mm. But look, it happened. I'm just saying that
it's all right, they're gonna, don't get checked. Wasn't top three.
Yeah, but he'd have jacked his winners. He would have got checked. True. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's an interesting decision, if nothing else.
Yes.
Shall we leave it at that? Which meant Ash Sutton won the race from Tom Ingram in second, Proctor with his second podium of the day. Gordon Sheridan, great result for him. Had a bit of resurgence, maybe, on the car's second half of the season. Let's certainly hope so.
He did well, and as you said, from qualifying, he got up through the grid quite well as well.
Adam Morgan in fifth, Aidan Moffat in sixth, Osborne, good result for him in seventh, yep. Chilton eighth, Aaron Tennis-Smith ninth. Not bad, considering he came from the back of the grid as well in this race. Okay, there's a lot of problems, but he did well to avoid them.
Topsy-turvy.
Mikey Doble, despite the pit lane excursion, managed to finish 10th ahead of Dexter Patterson, Max Buxton scoring points on his BTC debut, Charles Rainford, Nick Halstead, and Daniel Rowbottom, and then nobody else finished. So only the cars that finished were the top 15.
Yep.
We, of course, lost Hamilton, Dorlin, Jelly, Camish, Smiley, and De Leon.
We did. Should we get into some predictions? Or do you want to have a little moan and whinge first?
No, I was going to give a very quick update on the championship, to what this weekend's done in terms of that, as it has been quite pivotal coming into the weekend. Obviously, Ash Sutton was ahead in the championship. That has now changed. Tom Ingram is top on 273 points on Sutton, who is 265, which is an 8 points gap.
Yeah, so an 18 point swing over the points scored this weekend. Obviously, the massive part of that was Sutton not finishing that first race.
And I'll tell you what, had you said to Sutton, once he perhaps calmed down after race one, that you'll only be 8 points back at the end of the weekend, I think he'd have
taken it.
Absolutely correct. Daniel Rowbottom has moved up into third. He's on 195, so he's a long way, but he's 70 points off Sutton, so he's not in the championship very battle. But if you can finish third, that is a heck of a feather. I don't care what you say about carriage and luck and whatever. That's all part of racing. If Rowbottom can finish there, that is a hell of an achievement.
Yep.
Camish is indeed fourth. Tom Chilton fifth. Morgan sixth. Jake Hills dropped to seventh. Not surprising. He's obviously missed the round.
Yep.
Rainford in eighth. Cook in ninth. And Smiley in 10th. I won't go through the rest of them. We'll do that in the preview for Knock Hill.
That's fine.
Yes, should we do our predictions? Or do you want to do awards first?
Yeah, we'll do awards first then.
Okay, I think Drive of the Day will probably be fairly unanimous in. I've gone for Tom Ingram, assuming you're saying. You've got a win, a podium, and a pole. Not a great deal as you can do, is there?
No, and he drove the best on the hard tyre in that second race and still was able to finish inside the top 10, gaining a decent handful of points.
Aided by the fact that, of course, if you finish first, you're then the last car in theory to get to if you're on the soft tyre. But he drove well, and I don't think we can argue that at all. And he's, as you say, leading the championship now, which would have been his goal coming into the weekend at a circuit we both felt would suit the Hyundai over the Ford.
Yeah.
And so it came to pass. Who is your villain of the weekend?
I was troubled over this one.
Troubled.
So I was originally going to go for Mikey Doble.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back in slight hindsight, he did qualify third.
Yes.
And somehow still managed to take an independent win. So I don't feel like I can go for him.
No, and then while the mistake in race one is not something you'd characterise with him, I can only assume he had damaged the car or something, to why I was unable to get back through the field. Because
that would be my assumption. So I think I'm actually going to have to go for Dan Lloyd. Knowing how well he can go at this circuit and the unfortunate consequence of whatever's happened to the engine in qualifying has then hampered his whole weekend, he's not necessarily a villain, but possibly the most unluckiest man this weekend.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm going for a meta because I like to do that. I'm going for the championship as a villain this weekend and all its stupid rules and all its stupid regulations. Yeah.
I wonder where you were going with that.
No, and I will get into why about this when we do our summing up thoughts in a moment. So I'm going to leave it there and I'll explain that in a moment.
Okay, your surprise good.
It's BMW. They had a really good weekend. I thought, obviously, they've won the Jack Sears this weekend. De Leon got a podium. Moffat scored his best result of the season, I think. If not, it's certainly close to being. All three were able to run near the front at the sharp end of the grid. They weren't too far off the pace. Okay, Rainford makes a bit of a sloppy move in race three, but that's not the car's fault.
Yep.
That's the squidgy bit behind the wheel, as they say. So, no, I think that's BMW surprised you well this weekend.
I'm going down the line of De Leon. Yes, he's unfortunate in race three. I think he would have scored a decent amount of points. Yes, he would have been on the hard tyre. But up until then, he'd raced much better, and the car would perform much better than I thought it would this weekend. So I'm going for him as my surprise good.
Yep, that's absolutely fine. And then surprise bad.
Is it a surprise anymore?
You can't be picking on Jelly again.
I just...
You are! Wow, okay. Hang on. If I could just lay the case for the defence.
Go on.
First,
see if I want to change my mind.
First meeting in a brand new car, which is a no testing on in his life ever. Obviously, yeah. He spent the whole season getting used to front wheel drive in a completely different car, yeah. In a completely different setup, in a completely different team. What were you really expecting from him this weekend in a car that we know is not from look, without getting shouted at by Unlimited Motorsport, the Cooper's not very good. It's never it's never been very good in this championship. It's flattered to deceive at times, but if we're being real, has it been a success in this championship? I'm going to say no, unless it's in the hands of Bobby Thompson and to a degree Jack Gough.
Yep.
Okay, so what were you really expecting of Jenny this weekend?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay, as I say,
who's yours first of all?
Restart.
Okay.
I think they've been really poor this weekend in a track that suits the Hyundai, as we've seen.
Yep.
Should have done better with the Lloyd stuff. Okay, the engine, unfortunately, but they never recovered from that. Smiley in race one. Okay, that's unfortunate. But let's not forget, he got the hard tire out of the way and did nothing for the rest of the day. He was on softs for race two and three and nowhere near the front.
Yeah.
Getting involved in incidents up and down the grid as well, which is not like him this season.
Yeah.
I just think that it's a championship that is very difficult to score podiums and particularly wins in, particularly when you've got Ingram, Sutton, Robot and Camish, Chilton, all capable of doing that. And I think they pass up a real opportunity this weekend to get potential for silverware, but certainly to get some good results. And also an independent, when One Motorsport aren't here, you've got a real chance to put some extra points on the board. You can't have drivers not finishing races.
I think I'm going to have to revert back because I've now gone for Dan Lloyd as villain, sort of. I think I'd have to go for Doble. Yes, he did win the independents, okay, yeah. But there are difficulties for restart this weekend. Yeah. There's no One Motorsport. He made a mistake in race one. Yes, he had a good qualifying, but that's about the only good bit of the weekend, apart from somehow taking home the independence title.
He finished two races, didn't he? Did he finish with three, potentially?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the key in that championship, particularly when you've then not got one and you've got Smiley and Lloyd.
And there's
not finishing.
Big question mark over that move that he did onto Patson into the final corner of the final lap, for me. Did you not see that?
No.
Almost carbon copy of what who did in the earlier race, just basically launched it down the inside, knew he needed to take that position, and I ultimately think that's what's actually won him the independence this weekend.
Well, interestingly on that, we'll just come to the penalties then. In race two, Chris Smiley received a verbal warning for an incident involving Stephen Jelly.
Yes.
So, but that has put the blame on Smiley rather than on Jelly, and so on our watch we thought potentially it was Jelly that was to blame, but they've put the blame onto Smiley. Again, so the Defy Maya, it's been a surprise bad from restart this weekend. And then race three, Mikey Dover received a verbal warning for an incident involving Dex Patton. So that'd be the one you just said there. Yep. I'm amazed they haven't swapped back the places. Because they have finished, I believe, next to each other on the road.
So they were almost
nose
to nose over the line.
So I'm surprised about that. Senna Proctor was given an official reprimand and two penalty points for the incident with Aidan Moffat. Now, I get why they've not reversed this because they've not finished behind each other. Had Moffat finished behind Proctor, I'm almost guaranteed they'd have swapped the places.
Just under 5 seconds between the two. So that's the only other penalty that I could have seen them giving.
But we don't see 5 second penalties for that kind of move. We never have in the touring cars, and you can't start bringing it in now just because it suits the narrative of what's happened. I think we perhaps should bring in those time penalties.
Yep.
We see them in F1.
We see them for track limit penalties in the Porsches and stuff like that.
And I would argue that what Moffat did there was far more egregious. Sorry, what Proctor did there was far more egregious than slightly creeping on the start and getting some drive through penalty or having a mechanic leave the grid late, giving you a drive through penalty. But there we go. And then an incident between Jelly and Rainford will be investigated at the next event, i.e. the stewards were bored and wanted to go home.
Yes, quite.
Right, shall we get my misery out of the way and do the... Actually, I need that. I'll just throw that away. I need it back, actually.
We'll do some predictions first.
Yes.
So
that's what I meant by my misery. I'm going to cheer myself up with this.
Right, sorry. Pole position. You went for Morgan. I went for Proctor.
We both got the one high-end day.
Yeah. There's plenty to choose from. We both went for Ingram as a winner. Yep. So win-win for both of us there. You went for Camish. I went for Sutton, which you were unlucky. Camish ran well and could have possibly taken the win in race one. And we both went for Proctor to also take a win, which we didn't think was going to be anywhere near possible and then very nearly happened.
Yep, agreed.
As we've already mentioned, Rainford has won the Jack Sears this weekend. I went for Rainford, you went for De Leon. De Leon would have won it probably if he hadn't have been taken out in that final race.
Really annoyed by that.
We'll move on to your predictions first. Harvey mentioning the King of Croft.
Yeah.
When you messaged me on Saturday,
yeah,
going Turkington's in the car for FP2, I hung my head in my hands because I thought, oh God, he's gonna luck his way into this one.
The chances certainly went up, didn't they?
Yeah, massively. And then it didn't happen.
I was actually surprised by how little in the commentary they mentioned that Hill wasn't in the race. Yeah. Obviously, I know they mentioned it a fair bit off the races in the build-up to bits and pieces, but a lot of people don't tune in for the pointless waffle on the pit lane or the Jane Edmonds fan club. They they instead just watch the races. I'm surprised not more was mentioned.
BMW podium that isn't Hill. Your chances of that significantly increased when he wasn't there.
Yes, they did.
So, yeah, you managed to get a point for that with DeLeon taking a third, and then Ingram and Morgan to outscore Napa, which I thought was quite bold at the time.
It was, although it wasn't as far off as you might have thought it was. Now, had I gone for Ingram and Proctor, I'd have been a hell of a lot closer. And
yeah, okay,
ifs and buts and all that. But so, overall, it was 77 points scored between Ingram and Morgan and 96 across the whole of Napa, which isn't, as I say, you then put in Proctor's two thirds rather than a tenth, a fourth, and a fifth.
It's
a lot closer. I don't think it would have mattered. It was a lot closer.
So my no BMW podium, I thought was looking quite good when Hill wasn't going to be there, but De Leon showed decent pace. Mm-hmm. Proctor to outscore Camish, that Camish incident in the final race really helped me out.
Yeah, that was quite annoying because Camish scored 26, Proctor scored 30, which actually means that had I gone for Proctor, it would have been the same result, actually, because Morgan also scored 30. So, actually, I was just talking absolute nonsense in that last little section. So, yeah.
At least two Toyotas to score in each race. That was off the table in race two when Taylor Smith got that puncture.
I was slightly worried at one point because both him and Shed in particular had good pace. And with
Dorlin was on the verge of points as well.
Yeah.
It was pretty much expected that Buxton wasn't going to score many, if any, points this weekend.
But give him his due.
But he kept out of trouble in race three. And then we went for chicane cuts. So this was the second chicane coming out onto that back straight. I went for 9, you went for 13, and you were clenching towards the end of race three, weren't you?
Yeah, it was 8 in the end. Nothing happened in race 1 and 2. And then race 3, suddenly everybody started cutting the chicane. It was 8 overall, which...
Gives you a single point,
but it could have been a lot worse.
Just as well.
It could have been a lot worse. You lead 14-19. You scored 5 this weekend to my 2. I'm upset because I was so unlucky on quite a few of those.
It swung very wildly quite quickly in that final race, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And had Camish...
It's happened now, mate.
Yeah, Morgan let me down. Didn't have the... I fancied him this weekend to be the second best Hyundai, and he just wasn't.
Well, he was just on equal par with Proctor.
Proctor the better weekend, he took 2 podiums.
I know.
Points. I don't think Morgan's consoling himself as he goes home without a trophy. Go, well, at least I scored the same amount of points as Proctor.
Go on then. What's on the soapbox this week?
The championship is absolutely broken. And
can I give you a time limit? You've got 2 minutes.
Okay.
Just so you don't call too much.
Well, the biggest problems we have is that when you try and call stuff out, top names, I'm not going to name them because I don't want to get into any sort of arguments with fans or Twitter wars, but top ambassadors or people at high levels of the sport completely argue that there's no problem at all. This weekend, we saw really good support racing with the legends, which we're not going to see again apart from once more because they can't afford to do it year-round, which is absolutely nonsense. But you're not allowed to say that because apparently we just have to ignore that support race here and it's beyond their control. We've seen this week that the Toka package has been completely dropped. That is an absolute embarrassment for a top-tier racing series not to have a championship made for juniors, particularly given we had a perfect one of Ginetta that was allowed to leave the grid and go to GTs. Makes some sense because obviously Ginetta's running the GTs as well, but to lose that was an absolute a hammer blow to the championship, and the fact they've not replaced it some 2 years down the line going into the third year is a nonsense in its own right.
And it's not just that they haven't replaced. We've lost the Clios off the package as well. Yes, okay, you can say we've replaced those with the Minis.
But we don't
consistently see every Mini race because there are chop and change in between the categories and Minis that follow us to each event.
And they're not as good as bringing drivers through as the Clio Cup was, as simple as that. Added to that as well, where was I going with this? We then got the ridiculous tyre rules that we see. You get a two-class race. Nobody wants a two-class race. of the in the series. And then to make it even more pointless, if you're going to do the tyres, either do as you've said and do medium to soft, or just give them the boost. Stop. Don't take the boost away as well, because you're basically saying to them you're going to have the worst tyre. And by the way, because you finished first, you're going to get no race, no boost at all on the worst tyre. See what you can do. Oh, you fell through the field. Oh, no. Or you might get the chance to reverse grid, though. Oh, you didn't. Oh, that's a shame. That's your weekend done, then. When you've got top drivers literally in their interviews afterwards going, yeah, we've now got to run the hard.
That's the most damning fact for me, is that Ingram, Kamish, Proctor,
Robotton,
all across the board, and we saw it with Sutton dropping back to fourth at Alton, they're considering the fact that finishing fourth is actually going to be better for them than finishing with a trophy at the end of the day.
You can't have that.
To then get a possible trophy in the next race.
Yep.
Ideally, you want the top drivers scoring the top points and having those competitors right at the front of the field, because that's where the action is. Yes, I can see the understanding and the want for as many variations of drivers to take wins and make it seem a lot more interesting. But I think we're still going to get the interest with having those top drivers up there, having people battle for third, fourth and fifth in the championship. There are going to be different levels, and there are different levels of quality of driver within the championship. And I think sometimes you just have to accept that.
Same in every sport. Same in every single sport. If you look at the darts, you don't start littler. I mean, he starts himself five legs down, but you don't say to him, right, you're too good, you've got to start five legs down. Yeah, if you go out and win, you go out and win. That's the point of it.
Look at the F1 at the weekend. The top four, where they qualified, they went off into the distance in that first stint, and Alonso was there holding everyone else up because he knows that he hasn't got the pace in the car being able to develop it at the same sort of rate. And they were almost in a completely different race. But there was still excitement within that.
Yeah. And the thing is that there's no jeopardy, because you know that Leclerc's not going to start falling back through the field because he's now got to go and run a tyre that can't be raced on while everyone else races another tyre. That's the thing about F1. They can choose when they've got complete freedom over the tyre strategy. So if you're going to insist on this, you either allow complete freedom over the weekend to choose when you run it.
Yep.
You
still get that disadvantage of having to run that hard tyre. You just get the choice when.
Yeah. You keep the rule as it is, but you change it to mediums to soft, so you don't get such a ridiculous offset, and you don't get the sort of crash we saw in race three, which, you know, yes, driver error, absolutely, but part of that is because of the tyre. You don't take away the boost as well. That's the other thing. You've literally got a push-to-pass button now. If you like it or not, we've got a push-to-pass element to the championship. I don't like that, but it's here to stay.
One thing I must say on that is I don't think, yes, we have seen a good few passes happen because of that, but I don't think it's like majorly overpowered a DRS in F1.
I agree with that, but if you're already on a tyre that can't, you've got a massive offset on the tyre, and then you've got the extra, you know, from the boost, then you literally can't race. You literally can't race. So what's the point? And then on top of all of this mess this weekend, we have track limits, which is an absolute joke. I'm sorry, it is. And I know this is not necessarily the touring car's fault. This is Motorsport UK's, or whoever it is at least, this who have bought in the way it's going to be done this year. I'm very grateful they got rid of the furniture on the track. That's great. But one of the corners they did this weekend was so marginal that you did not get an advantage that no one else was getting by cutting it. But it was such a fine cut anyway.
I've already mentioned it, and Tim Harvey said it in, I think it was either qualifying or in general commentary, in the fact that not every corner is getting monitored.
Which is, outrageous.
Which is absolutely bizarre.
It's ridiculous.
And if you're not going to monitor every corner, then why are you punishing certain corners?
Yep.
And I can see why drivers feel that as completely unfair. If you're going to monitor them, monitor everything.
Yep.
If not, let the drivers race. Let them sort it out by themselves. And generally, you'll probably get better racing as a result of it.
And also, why, and I'm not having a go at the marshals or the stewards here that have to make the decision, but why are we doing it on video? It's got to be, if you're going to do it, pressure plate it. So there's no argument about it, because otherwise you are asking someone to make a judgment of 20 cars going around 16 times, and you've got to be spot on every time.
Yep.
There's no hope. There is no hope. If you're going to make a rule, you've then got to fund it so the tracks can apply the rules. I understand pressure plates are expensive. So if you're going to make this rule, you've got to make money available so tracks can implement the technology.
And especially the tracks that aren't MSP.
Yeah. But then, as you say, do it with every corner. In a football match, you don't get a referee going, right, from minute 75 to 80, I'm not going to referee. You guys do what you want. I'm going to stand back and not officiate this part of it.
It's almost like it's not ridiculous. Having linesmen. isn't it?
Yeah, or as I say, just deciding arbitrarily in the darts, where I would say, okay, this leg,
throw left-handed,
or just play, close your eyes, you know, or don't throw it at a board. We'll just make up the numbers, see what happens. Yeah, there's a lot of problems in touring cars at the minute. There's a lot of fans who are leaving the championship. There's a lot of drivers that are leaving the championship. And I can't help but feel a lot of it is down to the ridiculous nature of the rules that we're in. That it's not, okay, look, the answer is not, it was better in the 90s. We can't go back to the 90s. We haven't got a time machine. And nostalgia does a funny thing of making everything look a lot better than it probably was. However, we're now in a situation where you've got top drivers, and we're talking top drivers like Ingram and Kamish, who literally cannot race in race two. And basically the answer is being told to them, well, don't race then. Yep. So you're paying your fee for 30 rounds of the season. And if you do well, you're going to only race 20 of them.
Yep.
I've gone over my 2 minutes here. You've got involved in the conversation, which isn't great for sponsors or viewership or anything like that. And it's not good for the championship. I think I'll leave it there before.
One thing I must say is, thank you everyone out there for the interaction that we've had on our social media posts, especially this weekend surrounding obviously the many controversies that there are now within the touring cars.
And if you're new and you're thinking, oh, where can I find this? On our Facebook, that is the best place to have the debates, because it's just the easiest platform we've got for people to comment on as well. Can I finish on a slight high?
Go on.
I want to just give a real big shout out. You probably won't listen, but I thought Ollie Shields did a really good job this weekend in an environment he's not used to, with people he's probably not worked before. Obviously, pundit by trade. I thought he held the ship really, really well and really professionally this weekend, and made a very difficult job look rather easy.
Yes, he did. Let us know your thoughts on this.
Yes, there's no time for your final thoughts, I'm afraid. I have somewhat taken them up.
Let us know your thoughts on this weekend and how the racing has developed, how your favourite drivers have done, and how you would rate their weekend and what could be improved on. Let us know your thoughts. You know where we are, down in the comments below, on our Instagram, on our Facebook. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. Get the bell on if you're on YouTube as well.
It's not only Shields, is it? It's Nicky Shields who's taking over.
It's going to gloss over that.
Well, I don't get his name wrong. Absolutely does such a great job and then got his name wrong. It's Ollie.
It's Ollie.
We'll stick with Ollie. I thought I did a really good job. Yeah. I realised after I said it that I had a panic and thought, oh God, it's not his name, is it?
No, Nicky Shields will be taking over from Knockhill onwards, so we'll see how good a job she does. Maybe Russ will get her name right. But until then, we'll be back.
You can tell by the background it's late.
We will be back once again with another podcast before we get to Knockhill.
Until we speak again.